Hello, I'm Mariet Sneeman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to wellness professionals ready to assist with sincerity and care. Today's topic is Children with Level 1 Autism, a Plea for Understanding and Inclusion. My guest is Mariet K. Wood, social worker working in the medical field and mum from Cape Town. Welcome, Mariet.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's the first time I'm speaking to a namesake.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often, especially considering the fact that even the spelling is the same.
Yes.
It is a unique experience.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. After our conversation, it will be fun question time. Marie, today we're talking about children with high-functioning autism, specifically your 9-year-old son, West. And you and I decided that we'd like to create a better understanding of children in his position, not only to benefit these children, but also those of us who learn to see them for who they are.
Yes, that's correct.
Before we get to our topic, please tell us about your career.
So, yeah, I moved down to Cape Town when I was in high school. And then when the decision came, what do we study, as we all struggle with, I went through the various brochures and happened to luck upon a brochure from the University of Cape Town that advertised social work. And I thought, well, that sounds like fun. Little did I know how challenging that would be. So I completed my undergraduate degree at the University of Cape Town, and I graduated in 2005. And then did my postgraduate, my honors, also through UCT. And been working, my first 10 years that I've been doing social work was predominantly children, childcare, child protection, counseling, those kinds of things in various provinces in South Africa, as well as sometimes spent overseas. And then, got married and became a mom. And the shift kind of came quite naturally that it was a little bit more difficult working with children. So went into private practice, and that exposed me to what we now refer to as medical social work, in that I started locuming in oncology practices, at physical rehabilitation centers, and that just blew my mind with the information we got on working with cancer patients and stroke patients and just the effects it has on the brain. A lot of work with dementia over the last few years. And yeah, going on by the end of this year will be my 20th year in practice. So it's been an interesting career with the shifts between the different parallels.
Yeah. Tell us more about your family and where West fits in.
Yeah. So like I said, my husband and I met at a mutual friend's wedding. One of those typical little cute stories, and then got married. We've been based in the Helderberg, so Somerset West Strand area, for the last 15 years. So Weston is the youngest of my twins. They turned 9 this year. He's got a twin sister. And then there's also an older sister, and she is 13. And I mean, 13-year-olds pose their own challenges with high school and everything. But yeah, so Weston is the youngest in a very neurodiverse house. So he was diagnosed with level 1 or high functioning autism last year. He also has ADHD, which we refer to as combined type. The oldest sibling also has ADHD, and my husband was diagnosed with ADHD as a child and is still dealing with that. So it's a very neurocomplex house that we maintain.
Yeah, I'm very grateful that we can speak today because I think you have no choice but to gain many insights.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, so often we always look to the professionals, and what I've realized in our journey is no one can really educate you on what your role is going to be or what your path is going to be. You have to find your own way through it. You have to find what works in our case for Wes doesn't always work for his older sibling, who has the same attention issues. What works for her doesn't work for him, but how does it fit into the household? Like, because you've got to maintain a level of, I want to say decorum for a lack of a better word, because you can't have the other siblings feel that he's getting away with certain things because of a diagnosis. But sometimes you have to realize that because of his diagnosis, how he reacts in situations is difficult. So it's quite difficult having three kids and trying to maintain a set of rules and structures for everyone, but bearing in mind each one's unique eccentricities.
Yes. We'll talk about the different levels of autism and related issues a little later, but first tell us about West.
Oh, you know, he is, I call him my cuddly love. He is the most lovable and sometimes most, I want to say annoying, his mom, I'm allowed to, little man known to our family. He was the most active little person when I was still pregnant with them. He has, from day one, been the chatty one, the expressive one, you know, but probably about the age of 3, maybe 4 onwards, we realized that there is struggles for him. And initially it was, you know, he's 3, he's 4, he's adapting. But as he got older, we realized some things for him is just not the way it's supposed to be. So we met with a really good doctor who helped us kind of find our way. And it was a good 3 years before we got the diagnosis, because you had to rule out so many other things. You had to make sure it wasn't environmental factors. It wasn't just a typical 6-year-old or a 7-year-old. And then, yeah, so we finally went through that journey. And luckily we had an absolutely remarkable psychologist who went through the journey with us. And now it's just seeing him in his diagnosis, realizing that he's going to grow. So what works today is not going to work tomorrow. But yeah, he is, we're very fortunate. He is a little bookworm who devours any book that intrigues him. So Enid Blyton, he's currently very much loving Diaries of a Wimpy Kid. He is academically really high functioning. He loves maths, is a thing that he has absolute passion for. He has a handwriting that puts his mom and dad to shame. He has the most neatest handwriting. And he plays any sport that you throw in his direction. He plays rugby. He plays hockey. He does chess, which he started last year. He's really good at that and has a love for soccer, even though it's not an active sport that he participates in. So just generally a love for life. Takes the bull by the horns when he knows the bull is coming. And then, yeah, just like I said, on a good day, we'll come and sit on the couch and just give you big cuddles and loves. And, yeah, just he's our West. So that's him, yeah.
Mm. You know, Marie, before I spoke to you, I didn't realize that there are different levels of autism. So I am in need of this conversation.
Yeah, I think when the diagnostic manual changed, there's this complete misperception. People don't realize that not everyone fits in the boxes. So we were quite, as his parents, were quite happy about the fact that it came in these different grades, because it made it easier for us to understand where he fits in on his spectrum, so to speak.
How would you describe the different levels?
So from what, as it was explained to us, so at the moment there's 3 predominant levels that they refer to, which is level 1, which is your high functioning children, which is where West falls, which means these are the kids that they need some assistance, but for a lack of a better phrasing, in general day-to-day functioning, they're actually pretty good at, and they don't need as much support as your level 2 or 3. Your level 1 children, like in Weston's case, he can maintain eye contact. He can have a backwards and forwards conversation with you. He has an extensive vocabulary. Whereas with your level 2 and 3 children, very often language difficulties become prevalent. Some of your level 3 kids might even be nonverbal in the sense that they don't communicate using verbal language at all. They may have other ways of communicating. They might be more sensory issues. So Weston has a few things that he doesn't enjoy from a sensory point of view. But for us, so your level 2 and 3, they need more assistance. They might need more time to complete activities. They might require more input from speech and language pathology. They may have more difficulty engaging in eye contact, having conversations, or things like that in just general day-to-day functioning.
You know, I once read someone said that when you've met one individual with autism, you've met one individual with autism. So how does your son reflect level 1 autism?
I absolutely loved what you just said, because I think the world's perception is if you've met one, you've met them all. I think media has portrayed autism in a very negative light, in that they portray a specific version of autism and they don't explain that there is this spectrum or different levels. So for Wes, what we see is he has the very rigid behavior. So he is he needs structure and routine, to the sense of certain things in our house is not negotiable. So lunchbox for school, you have to have a dairy product. We need our probiotics, but he doesn't enjoy yogurt. So it's having alternative options for him to choose from. So it's, we get up in the morning, we get dressed, we have breakfast. What would you like for breakfast? So breakfast is not negotiable, but there are options. When he is in a situation where he feels overwhelmed, he shuts down. And that's then where you see the lack of eye contact, the lack of communication. And then the funnest thing about him is in certain instances, he hyper-focuses. At the moment, his hyper-fixation is soccer. So any information about international soccer players, he will read the books in a couple of minutes and he retains the information. We joked with someone the other day to say, if you ever need Wes to come with you or to do something, start asking him questions about Cristiano Ronaldo. And he will tell you verbatim facts that he's read. He's done orals on him. So we see that in particular, that hyperfixation, and how he can have a meltdown should his routine be out, which is difficult to maintain sometimes because life happens. But he needs to know, it's Thursday today. So we've got school until this time. Then there's a sports practice. You know, sports practice lasts from this time to this time. This person is fetching him, so there's a bit of rigidity to how we maintain our day to day. But as long as he knows what's coming and he has that structure, it makes it easier for him to kind of just be himself in a day to day situation.
I know all children experience challenges, but since we're trying to develop more understanding for children with high functioning autism, could you tell us which challenges Wes experiences?
So I think at the moment, one of the biggest challenges for him is he is perceived as being rude because he doesn't always engage with someone. For example, if he's reading a book and you want him to play a game, if he's not interested in that game, he may not say to you, no, thank you, I would rather read my book. He would just stay where he is. And society kind of thinks that that is rude of him, because how dare he not do what the adult says? They don't take into consideration that maybe that book, he's safe, but emotionally he feels safe reading that book. He's in a good space, so kind of leave him. So we have a lot of challenges with people finding him to be very rude or very blunt, because sometimes he does lack the affect in his voice. His biggest gripe with his sisters at the moment is he's not very good with sarcasm. So when you say something sarcastic to him, he has trouble realizing what you say, because his world is very black and white. There's no in the middle. Him and I had an argument about something and he didn't want to throw it away. I remember I said, if you don't throw it away, I think it was a piece of paper, and I said something like, I'll tear it into a million pieces. And he very, without qualms, looked me in the eye and went, you can't. It's impossible. Mm. And that is where his behavior, because another adult would think that he's trying to challenge, but he actually wasn't. In his brain, what I said did not make any sense. He didn't get that that was just something I said, because his brain goes, that piece of paper cannot be torn into a million pieces. And then he tells you. So that's where we get the he's rude or he's disruptive. Because he functions so well at school, he sometimes finishes faster than other kids, and then in his own way tries to help, but generally tends to take over. So the friends aren't always all that willing to have him, in inverted commas, help, because his help doesn't always come in the way that the friends would appreciate. And he's trying to learn. He's trying to see, this facial expression my friend has says that maybe I said something, or maybe I did something in the wrong way. But apart from his diagnosis, he is also still just a 9-year-old boy who has to figure out you know, what things mean in life, and they don't have all the answers yet. So I think for us, that's the most difficult thing, is to make people understand that sometimes he's a 9-year-old boy and he can be a bit of a bum, but other times he is also just trying to keep himself safe in an emotional capacity, or he is trying to regulate emotions that he doesn't always understand, or he's trying to understand what you are saying, but because he doesn't know how to properly read your body language, he cannot see that your face is angry or sad. So he doesn't always react appropriately, not intentionally, but just because of how his brain chemistry works.
How do you help him address these challenges at home?
So one of the biggest questions that's become part of our household is, if he does something that upsets, especially one of his siblings or someone visiting, is we try and reflect the question back to him to say, you know, you're not in trouble, but if you were in that person's shoes and I made the comment to you, how would you feel? So it's trying to make him acutely aware of the fact that his words have an impact, even if the impact wasn't what it came out to be. He may, in all honesty, tell you that he doesn't like what you're wearing. So it's making him aware of the fact that we can be honest, but how do we say it in a way that's not always rude or offensive? Because unfortunately, sometimes the way he says things would be, you look ugly, or your clothing doesn't match. And having two sisters, that is not something that goes down well in our house. So it's trying to teach him to say, if they said that to you, and then he sometimes takes a few minutes, or he will storm off to his room, and then after a while will come back and go, I wouldn't have felt nice. So he does need some time to sometimes process. He can't just instantly react. So it's making him aware of the fact that, you know, if you tell someone, no, I'm not going to, they might think that you're rude. But if you go, no, I'm not going to because I'm enjoying my book, or is it all right with you that I rather read my book? So it's changing how he phrases things. And then just, yeah, making those in his life around him aware of, he may sometimes say something. And if it upsets you, please tell him that. But we'll also, from our side, then try and help him to deal with it in a better way.
And Mariette, how do you help him address these challenges in other situations?
So those are the more tricky ones, because we're not always there in situations. So what myself and my husband have realized that's really important is, we cannot keep his diagnosis quiet. There's nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed about. So we need to share his diagnosis with people in his life. His family need to know, his teachers need to know, because the hope is that if they understand the diagnosis, then maybe it'll be easier for them to understand him. So it's little things like making sure when he started school this year that his class teacher knew what our diagnosis was. She's aware of the medication that we're on. So she'll keep us updated and say, you know, it looks like he's not having a good day today. And then we work on those. We don't really explain it to the children, because how do you tell friends what this diagnosis is? But we will discuss it with the parents to say, you know, something silly. If you have a birthday party at the Spur, he might completely just for the entire party sit and play on the electronic games. That's not him not wanting to be there. That's just, it's loud, it's bright. He's completely sensory overwhelmed, and that spot keeps him safe. So our biggest way of dealing with these things at the moment is to make sure that people know, and then we are always open to say, if he does something that you find odd or you don't understand, please ask us. Let us help you figure it out. And we've had some really good feedback on that. And we've also just had some people who kind of, this is the box and he needs to fit in the box. And if he doesn't fit into the box, then he is the problem, and they are not going to further educate themselves regarding not just Wes and his diagnosis, but potentially any child with a similar diagnosis.
How can teachers help West address these challenges?
We have been, from a school point of view, really, really lucky in that his teacher last year and this year have managed him really well, in knowing that, so certain things, he finishes his activities really quickly. So having something else for him to do, or having a calm down, so let's lie down on our arms or things like that, they understand. You know, he has this need to always be in the front of a line. So they've been able to explain to him nicely about changing. But should he need a moment, they know, you know, give him a few seconds, let him go sit outside, ask him to go empty a dirt bin so that he is not in the situation. For those few seconds, he kind of finds himself, composes himself, comes back, and then you can engage with the conversation. So I think a lot of what we find is helpful is that, one, they know, but two, they also understand what he needs to be in that moment. And that, again, I think comes back for us to the absolutely phenomenal psychologist we had for his diagnosis, because she shared her report with us, which we were able to share with the school. And we actually arranged for her to meet with his then and this year's teachers. And she broke down her report to say, this might be what you see. This is how you can help with it. So we have that open relationship with the school to say, you know, are there challenges? And if they need activities to keep him busy because he's getting done too fast or things like that, then they know that they can ask us, and we will, to the best of our abilities, provide them with things so that he doesn't become disruptive in class, because that disruptiveness then upsets everyone else, and that makes him more upset. And then it's just this snowball effect that just leads to a really big situation that is normally preventable if you kind of catch it at the root. So it's just for them to know what's going on and then to just kind of tackle it in the moment.
My next question is, how can the parents of other children help to create a more inclusive environment?
That's a tricky one because of his age. But what we have found that has been quite helpful is, you know, there are a few parents who we've had to say, you know, this is his diagnosis, especially when there's a play date involved or when he's been invited to a birthday party, is to say, you know, you are going to, example would be the spur, where he absolutely loves being with his friends, but 10, 20 children screaming and shouting and things, it overwhelms him. So if you find that he is going to sit somewhere, just, you know, we always say, give him a minute. That's kind of our phrase in the house, is give him a minute so that he processes what's going on around him, so that he kind of gets used to the noise levels, and then he'll actively engage. We also tell parents, you know, we try and teach him that if someone does something that he doesn't like, go tell an adult. You know, so often boys in particular, if someone does something, they kind of retaliate in an aggressive way, and we need to not have that happen. So if he comes to you and says, but this friend or that friend did something, just hear him out. You know, sometimes all he needs to do is just to talk to an adult. He doesn't necessarily have to, you don't have to intervene. Sometimes just being able to say, this friend said this and it hurt my feelings, or this friend did that, just the act of talking to someone helps. So I think, you know, it's just knowing that he is a little different. But at the end of the day, he's still going to play on the jungle gyms with your kid. He might just need a few minutes before he gets there. You know, if you're inviting him to something, he absolutely hates taking his shoes off. So prepare us, tell us there's going to be a play area with no shoes, because then we can talk to him beforehand. So a lot of prepping and planning sometimes is needed. And we found that, you know, the one or two friends that have really engaged with him and that see him for who he is have absolutely no problem. He went to a birthday party last year, and he's not a fan of water. So the mom said, you know what, if he has like a little floaty tube or something, bring it with. And he was the only child there. And it became such a nice activity because all the kids were playing along with him in the pool and, you know, pulling him by the floaty. So he was still included, even though if he had a choice, it wouldn't be an activity he would have picked for himself. And I think that made him feel welcome, because they realized, you know, we can still have fun with him, even though he does things differently to how we would do it in the same situation.
Yeah, that's a very sensible way to go about it.
Yes.
Now, as a parent, Mariette, you grieve about the dissonance between the person you know your son to be and the way he often is perceived. Which misconceptions do you come across?
I think the biggest one, that it was a full-on figurative gut punch, was when someone made the comment to us after his diagnosis, and they made the comment and said, oh, don't worry, children like him can at least finish high school. And you want to go, you know, my son has an autistic diagnosis. No one ever said that his intellect is lacking. People, because he sometimes takes a moment, you know, they distance. They don't want to, he's, like I said, he's the rude one. So it's sad to think that people don't see this little person. Like, if they get to know him, they wouldn't make a comment like, oh, well, at least he'll finish high school. You know, he's got a really bright academic future in front of him if that is what he chooses to do one day. So it's just, I think for us, what we've experienced is people's misperceptions about what this diagnosis holds. You know, there's so many movies where they portray the nonverbal children that yell and scream. And yes, there are those children, and those are challenges that those parents face. But that picture of what this diagnosis is has, in essence, made it more difficult to try and show people that that is not how everyone with autism is. And if that is the autistic person, you know, then, you know, love that person and engage with the person where they're at, but don't assume that everyone will be the same. So often we get told, oh, but he makes eye contact. And you want to go, yes, that's like one of the few things that some autistic kids do, is they have trouble making eye contact. Yeah. So it's just, it's getting people to realize that what they think the diagnosis is versus how it looks for each and every child is completely different. So don't make comments like, oh, at least he will finish high school. Rather ask, does the diagnosis affect his academics? Or, you know, he's autistic, how can he play team sports? He actually loves team sports. And if you ask us why, then we can explain to you that part of his diagnosis was we realized he's an extreme extrovert and he fills his cup by being around other people, which is funny because most people think that he's rude, but he actually gets such positive feedback from being on a hockey field or being on the rugby field and engaging with his friends, even when it is that they're yelling at each other because someone did something wrong. So instead of making the comment, rather turn your comment into a question and ask, you know, does his diagnosis affect this? Is the diagnosis the reason that he does this, instead of just, you know, oh, but why? I think that does him the biggest, that makes him, I'm trying to think of the word now, it causes the dissonance between who he is and who people perceive him to be, because there's this big thing that they're not bothering to understand in between. Mm-hmm.
I know that people's inability to see him for who he is hurts you deeply. Would you like to say more?
I think that is one of the most painful things about this diagnosis. We were quite relieved when we got the diagnosis because my husband and I are both of the opinion, let's know what the problem is and then we'd know how to work with it. But people making comments without understanding can be really, really painful at times. You know, he's 9, he's difficult at some stages. It's par for the course. But having people consistently make comments about the same things. Silly example, he doesn't eat rice, no matter what you do with it. He doesn't eat it. But then you keep telling him that he's wasting your food because you keep giving him rice. We've learned at home, don't give him the rice. So it's so, the ongoing battle that we have to fight for society to realize that he is actually an amazing little boy. It's heartbreaking when he comes to you and says, but no one wants to play with me. Or, you know, why don't I get invited to birthday parties? And I mean, this year has been a roller coaster for us. But like I said, he's had one or two friends and they have completely, they've enveloped him with love. And he has just felt so included by these two boys in particular, that I think for him, it's made up for all the hurt. But as a mom, you don't always forget how people treat him or what people say. And that's difficult because, like, the little hairs on the back of your neck stand up. And you get, most of the time in front of people, we get upset because of what they do. But when you sit in your room and you're in your bed and this little cuddly boy is snoring away next to you, you can't help but, you know, just wonder, like, how many opportunities at really good friendships or really good interactions is he going to miss because people misperceive him? People don't want to bother to get to know him. Mm-hmm. Or because people make these strict rules that says you can't do this or you can't do that. But those things are what would make him easier, if that makes any sense. Like he's quite, if he has a moment where he has a, in our house, we call it a wobble. You can tell him, how about we go get your phone and let's play a crossword game. He's not paper-based crossword puzzles give the clues differently. So he's better at it on his phone. And some people just have a rule of no devices in the house or only between these times. So the things that you could use to help get to know him and to experience him in a positive way, because your rule is that it's not allowed, you are preventing him from kind of being himself by doing that.
What would you say to other parents raising children with high-functioning autism?
Hang in there. Yeah, I think that's what we tell ourselves every day, is just hang in there. It's 2 steps forward, 5 steps back. We have good days, we have bad days, and you are doing the best that you can, whatever that is. Whether it is you having to have 5 different types of apples in your fridge because at least you're getting him to eat the apple, or whether it is you crying alone in your bed at night because you've had a rough day, you know what, you're doing the best that you can. And at the end of the day, that's what your kid's going to remember. They're going to remember the effort you put in to have 5 different apples because you know that he's going to pick a different one every day instead of forcing him. So do the best that you can. That's what we try and do. You know, there is no recipe book. There is no right or wrong here. It is you do what you need to do for yourself, for your child, and for your family, and you manage it as best as you can.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, marietsneeman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under services on my website. Now, back to my guest. Mariette, can you recommend any support groups or other sources you find helpful?
I naturally don't sleep very well after 4 o'clock in the morning. So I have found so many great Facebook groups, both South African and international, that offer autism support. There's Autism SA, there's an autism group in the Western Cape, and they do lovely short little trainings just to kind of tell you you're doing the right thing. And they focus on different topics, but also just having a big anonymous forum where I'm just Mariette, mom of Wes, and I can put up there, you know, guys, this happened today and it was absolutely awful. And having other parents go, you know, we get it. Or for them to go, have you tried X, Y, or Z? I've got quite a number of groups, like I say, on Facebook that I follow. And then also just having the support of a good medical team, it makes a difference. We've got a good neurodevelopmental pediatrician that he sees. We had, like I said, an absolutely phenomenal educational psychologist that helped us with his diagnosis and going through that process, and she's still involved. We have a phenomenal pediatrician who we have. So just making sure that you surround yourself with whoever it is. It doesn't have to be a formal autism support group. Just having a group of friends that when life gets hard, you can go and sit at someone's house and cry over a cup of coffee makes a difference. It's knowing that there's someone. You need your own little village. Like I said, I found some on my groups. I have some with my friends. I have friends who also have children who are neurodiverse. So it makes it a little bit easier. And once you start realizing that other people's kids are kind of also have these diagnoses, it's easier for you to connect with them than it just is to try and do this on your own, because you cannot fight this by yourself. It's completely and utterly undoable if you try and do it by yourself.
For the sake of our listeners, I'd like to mention that you've written a moving piece called The Grief No One Talks About: Parenting, Perception, and a Different Kind of Loss. And this can be read on my website. I'll attach the link to it to this podcast.
Yeah, that was a dark morning. We'd had a particularly rough couple of days. And it was one of those, couldn't really sleep. And I've always been, I think, training as a social worker, we've always been taught it's good to get things out. And one of the mediums that I'm most expressive in is writing. And I just sat there that day and I just thought to myself, like, people need to understand that we as parents, we grieve. You know, we're so often we're taught, but you only grieve when you've lost something. And in essence, the world is losing something by not getting to know my son. And that hits hard. It knocks you in places you didn't know you had when you realize that you have this little, you know, I'm a mom, so I am prejudiced. I do think he's absolutely awesome. But, you know, people won't get to know some of the little things that he loves doing. You know, they won't, they'll never hear that genuine belly laugh that he has at home with us, because they would never experience him like that. They don't get to see the little boy who at his first chess tournament was trying to help the opponent by saying, no, don't do that, do that, to his own detriment. He would have lost. Mm. So, yeah, people don't get to see that because what you initially see is that little blunt, maybe offensive, might be, in your opinion, rude boy because he doesn't do things the way you as the adult think it should be done. Mm. So, yeah, and that's a powerful to experience, that you've got you want the world to see who he is, but you also need to protect him. And you realize the world's going to lose out on a lot of who he is because they can't see past. Mm-hmm. That's what is right in front of them. They don't want to dig a little deeper.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing this with us. And I really respect, I don't know what the word is. I don't think sensible is a strong enough word, but I would like to say the balanced way that you are tackling these challenges.
It's the only way you can. You have to, yeah, like I said, you've got to find what works. In, you know, the way we do it would be, might not work for anyone else. And that's why I say that the biggest challenge for a parent here is to find what works for you. And I want to go, it doesn't matter if anyone agrees with you or if they think you're doing it the right way. As long as you know that what you're doing in that moment is the best you can do, then I honestly don't really care what anyone else thinks. Mm. As long as we as a family can live with how we do things, then that works for us. And then I think as a mom, I feel like I'm doing the right thing in that moment.
Yeah. Before I let you go, may I ask you a fun question?
Go for it. On the serious topic that we did now, it might be a good way to finish off as having something interesting. So let's go for it.
I was wondering, if you were a squirrel, where would you like to live?
Oh my goodness, that's actually fascinating. So for the first 15 years of my life, I lived in Johannesburg with my parents until I moved down to Cape Town. Hmm. And my favorite place in the world, even to this day, is the museum in Cape Town. So to get to that museum, you would need to go through the Compagnie Gardens in Cape Town.
Oh.
So if this mom could be a squirrel, she would definitely be. There is this beautiful, there's two trees in the gardens that were planted by Jan van Riebeeck when he came, and they have got fencing around them to protect them. So I would definitely be in one of those trees because, one, it's a beautiful garden to be in. Two, there's always foot traffic. So I would have food galore. But three, it would have me close to my favorite place on earth, which is that museum.
I'm so pleased. And, you know, when I was a teenager, I visited the Compagnie Gardens with my parents, and I do remember the squirrels there.
Yeah, they are everywhere there. So, like, I mean, I would fit in perfectly. So, no, that would be the best place to be a squirrel, would be those gardens, because as you walk in, you can buy peanuts and people will feed you. It's just, it would be lovely.
Oh, thank you, Mariette. And I wish you the best of luck with your journey. And I really hope that what you've said will touch many minds and hearts.
I genuinely hope so too. I think that's all we as parents can do, is we can advocate, we can educate, and then hope for the best. Hopefully as we learn more and we know more as a society, we'll become a little bit more in tune with how to work with kids that aren't fitting the boxes that we think they should.
Thank you. And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast series, and if you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series Calm, Clear and Helpful is produced by me, with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.